It is that season. Do you know that season that we're coming into now? That season that we should all be aware of. It's the Grinch season. How many of you have ever seen that animated film called How the Grinch Stole Christmas? Have anybody seen it? Anybody but me? Am I the only one? No, okay. I am, those of you who know me know I'm kind of a hopeless optimist. And I don't make any apologies for that, but the Grinch has always been kind of a Grinch to me. You know, I don't know how to say that otherwise, but just sticks in my craw that anybody would be that anti-Christmas. But I watch the video whenever I'm available because of the Grinch's dog. Do you know the Grinch's dog? Max. That little dog is worth the whole thing for me. Once the pieces is over and Max is no longer in the picture, I'm kind of get bored with the whole thing. But Max is just this indomitable spirit, isn't he? Intriguingly, the Grinch really doesn't treat him very well. Well, we really don't know, but Max has never run away. So Max is sticking it out. Maybe there's a lesson there for us with people that we're not sure about. And sometimes it would be easier to step away. But Max hangs in there, like any good pet, just enthusiastic and dedicated and full of exuberance, happy, and persistently trying lovingly to be good and to do good. Do you agree with me about Max? Do you think that Max's behavior influences the Grinch? I don't think so. I don't think it makes any difference at all. And should Max even try? I mean, he's the Grinch. You're a mean one. I'm going to be singing that all day today. Now, you know I am, Mr. Grinch. But why would I be talking about the Grinch in a sermon on Sunday morning? Because of Hebrews. Holly read it to us this morning. Did you hear? Paul wrote to the Hebrews. He wrote all of that we read today. He said, and let us consider how to provoke one another to love and good deeds. Oh, my. Oh, my. Do good, we understand. Anybody here have any doubts about what doing good means? It's kind of what we explore a lot, and we know what that's about. But how many of you have been called by God to provoke one another? That's an interesting word, isn't it? Think about what provoke instills in you when you hear that word. The Greek word, paroxysmos. Paroxysmos. Say that once with me. Paroxysmos. We won't remember that 10 seconds from now, but that's okay. But paroxysmos, it means to urge, to unsettle, to motivate, to irritate, to stir response. Intriguingly, you can put a grain of sand in an oyster and it will make a pearl. Is that true? Any of you know your biology well enough? So you're putting an irritant in this creature and it builds this calcium pearl around it to protect itself. You're provoking the critter. It's like a burr under the saddle. How many of you have ever been out riding on your horse and your horse has a burr under the saddle? This is probably not the group to talk to that about. When I was in Johnstown, there's a lot of people with horses and there was land or all around. But if you had a horse that was misbehaving, there was a pretty good chance you could figure out something was wrong. You needed to stop and unsaddle the horse, which is a big job, take off the blanket, make sure that there wasn't a burr in there, because horses' hides are pretty tender and they will let you know that something's not right. So that you get a burr under a saddle, that's a way to provoke the horse to a response. I was thinking about other provocations and Remember the story of the princess and the pea? That came to mind. I'm not sure it fits. But remember, she proves she's a true princess by she can't sleep because there's this pea under in the mattress, and she detects it. There's an irritant there that won't let her rest. I don't know much more about that. I just remember, what's her name that did the TV version of it? Oh, what's her name? Comedian Carol Burnett, thank you. She played the princess and the pea. You vaguely remember that? Now some of you are going, oh, I remember that. Here's a better provocation. Have you ever gotten a splinter or a sliver? This is one of my favorite illustrations. I'll get a sliver or a splinter when I'm doing woodworking, and I'll say, ah, nuts. And then I'll go about my business, and I'll ignore it. Sooner or later, it'll start bugging me again, and it'll keep bugging me until I stop and get rid of it. This is your body's way of saying you are going to get ill. I'm not sure if that's proper English. But the body instructing us that we need to fix something. Something's wrong here. Get in here. Take care of this. Return to health. Right down here on the road, what's the diagonal road that runs through our thing here? Belmont. There we go. Thank you. There's one of those traffic things on the side, and it has the speed limit, and then it, when you pull up, it tells you instantly how fast you're going. You know what I'm talking about. You've seen those. When they first went up, I remember that I would see those and think, oh my goodness, I'm speeding. They never ever tell you you're going too slow. I don't know what the deal is with that. But nowadays, I see them and I realize that what the speed limit is, and I sort of ignore them. Do you? Just kind of breeze on by. They're changing that now. You need to be aware. They're going to add software and hardware and take your picture and mail you a speeding fine. They're going to provoke a response, and it's going to cost you money. They know how to do that. But slowing people down is a good thing. If you've been out there, I hear these very rapid vehicles traveling up and down the streets around me all the time. So this is a good thing to provoke a good response. But here is Paul, and it's the really very word that he's using, provoking us to love and good deeds. Provoke each other to love and good deeds. Now, I can understand showing someone how I might do something loving. Through my example, maybe that will impact some people. Maybe it'll affect some people you don't know. And sometimes, especially here in the mail or on TV or on the internet or on YouTube or all of the different social media, somebody will provoke us to say, give to this needy cause. And all too often, they're scams. And so we've become immune to that. We've built a scab over being able to respond to such provocation. But we do need to help one another and finding legitimate ways to do that. And here's a brief advertisement for UMCOR, the United Methodist Committee on Relief. We really do a good job through that. And it's a real thing that's done by real churches and real pastors. It's one of those places, if you're thinking about helping a disaster, North Carolina, those people flooded out, the hurricane, different people, there's another hurricane, a typhoon in southeast oceans there. There's disasters all the time. And right now, fires, and we hear of those, and we want to help. How do we help? UMCOR is there on all of those. Where there is United Methodist Churches, there is UMCOR. So a brief advertisement there. And maybe I'll provoke all of us to respond there and to give a little bit out of our prosperity and our safety and out of our plenty, and to give just a bit. Because of a lot of us giving a bit gives a lot. I'm turning into a stewardship sermon here, isn't it? I didn't mean to go down this path necessarily. Paul's letter to the Hebrews it's a negative inducement. It's not a positive thing. For if we willingly persist in sin after having received the knowledge of truth, then there no longer remains a sacrifice for sins, but a fearful prospect of judgment and a fury of fire that will consume the adversaries. That's sort of like the traffic ticket on the speeding sign, isn't it? There's a negative inducement. You better do this or else. Can we induce someone to love using threats? Can we fearfully force someone that way through fear to be more loving? I don't know if that's possible. Let us consider how to provoke one another to love and good deeds, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another. A fella I knew in my first full-time appointment in Fort Morgan, Ham Jackson. He was a doctor, very active, a scout leader, vivacious, busy, full of energy, had a serious stroke. He lost half of the movement in his body. And so he could get around with the help of his wife, Avis. But he had to quit doctor practice. He had to quit scouting. He had to quit all the things that had been central to his life. But he was the most positive person I've ever met. And he did that deliberately. If something was going on and something was happening, and there might be discussions around something, he would invariably have a positive something to say, or he didn't say anything at all. But he more than often than not, he deliberately was positive, and it was a lesson to me. I said, I'd like to be like that. I'm working on it. I'm not there yet. But encouraging one another to be positive is that sort of thing. It's not a Pollyanna sort of thing, a hopeless, mindless, it doesn't make any difference. The shooting has unsettled me. I hope it has. I mean, last night, two dead. What can we do? How can we encourage one another? Where can we plug into this? I don't know. I'm off track again here. This is not the way the sermon was headed, but it fits in with where we're about, isn't it? How to teach us to love one another, how it teaches us to provoke love and good works. Because one of the things it says, not neglecting to meet together, it means don't be in isolation. I have a tendency that's happening there. I'll just withdraw further and build bigger walls around my house and my family. But that's not how we do that. And sometimes in meeting together, we inspire each other. Did you know some of you inspire me sometimes? The first lay leader, and I was a student church, I was a student pastor, Wayne Nicodemus. Nicodemus, just like in the Bible, that was his last name. He says, I'm a perfect example. He says, I'm the perfect example of everything not to do. And Wayne wasn't, but it was a delightful, humorous thing to say. And it helped us think about how we are examples to one another. Because sometimes somebody will say something and I'll think, well, I never thought of it that way. Have you ever had that happen? Maybe in a sermon once or twice? We can hope. Have you had people who have instilled in you growing love? Helped you grow in your ability to love one another? I think we call those saints that have helped us. Sometimes it's just people randomly that do something and it just instills in us hope and reminds us that there are a lot more good people. There's a lot more good in the world than there is bad. And it's easy to become jaded. It'd be easy to just kind of back away. Do you remember what Jesus was saying about the stones of the temple? All of the stones of all the buildings will come down. Not one will be left upon another. And the disciples wanted to know when that was happening. I mean, if we knew that the last day was such and such a day, we'd make special plans, wouldn't we? Would we do things a little differently? Well, now is the time to do those, is what Jesus teaches us. But he warns us, too. He says, many will come and claim to be me. I am he. The Greek, ego eimei, I am. And they will lead many astray. And there's much of that that goes on. There's much of that that happens. And we, as God's Christian children, need to be the testimony against those things. Hebrews talks about Jesus, the Christ, who is the one, makes the one sacrifice for all time to eliminate that yearly giving of a sacrifice, that yearly atonement that has to be made and remade, which means that it wasn't made effectively when it was made, the priests. And how many of us continue to carry along things that we've done year after year and not allow ourselves to get past those things and get on? And Jesus makes that atonement for all time that purifies and forgives. Forgives us and calls us to another possibility, provokes us to forgive others. There are a handful of people in my life that I've just gotten stuck in my craw that I just have a hard time forgiving. I'm sure I'm the only one. Thank you for your laughter. But how do we forgive? Because it changes us. And in our forgiving, we are about provoking someone else to forgive. Think about Christ's intercession for us, forgiving us. And as we debate how we can provoke one another, and I've been struggling this since I read it and thinking, how do we irritate people to love one another? That's what provoke means, but it can be a positive provocation. We can nudge people in ways that we can't imagine, and we can nudge people in positive ways, but I'm still exploring this. This is a concept that's, maybe it's too foreign for us, but one that we need to think about. To provoke one another to love and to good deeds. How do we do that? We begin by accepting the fact that Christ is provoking us to love. And out of that love, to love one another. Seems like he said that somewhere, didn't he? He said, this commandment I give to you, love one another as I have loved you.